Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
As did this listener. I'm a pensioner and I'd love to see a pensioner portion being served in restaurants. It's very common in Northern Ireland, but not here. It would help people like me on a pension eat out more. The full portion at my age is just too much food and too costly. Please, Greg, appeal to get this going in restaurants in Donegal. I'm not sure if restaurants might be in favour of that. I know for a fact that sometimes people circumvent that by ordering off the children's menu because they're simply not hungry enough for a main course. But some restaurants disapprove of that and they only allow adults to order full portions. So with that in mind, can you imagine a pensioner's portion coming into effect? Maybe it would be a good idea and attract more traffic. Let me know. 086 60 25,000. A caller says it's common in Northern Ireland. It's not something I've ever come across, but it's not something I've ever looked out for either. So it's an interesting comment. Let me know what you think. These insurance companies are ripping off the people of this country and not one thing is being done about it, full stop. Very hard to say anything other than that. Could Highland refrain from commenting on the presidential election and let people make up their own minds? Too many media outlets trying to persuade people how to vote. It would be nice to have a presidential election free of local radio. Well, that's all well and good. Wait till you see when the nominations are announced. They'll be down at the Ploughing Championship. We'll be getting calls. In fact, we've already got calls for someone interested in being the president to come on the show twice. Not once, but twice. So they see the importance of it and how they reach people. I mean, is that not a democracy? I'm not trying to influence anyone. I couldn't, you know, I'm not that passionate about it, to be honest with you. But of course, we're going to give people a platform to say why they should have this role. How else would you find out? I mean, there are other means, don't get me wrong, but Greg, I know that no words can describe the atrocities that the so-called Western democracy of Israel undertakes every minute of the day in Palestine, but doesn't the media need to reword their description and replace the word Israel with the terrorist state of Israel, and instead of using killed, use the word murdered? I know this is a little seemingly insignificant, but it will show Israel that they are, and also those now lulled into the monotony of ongoing atrocities and famine, and maybe create an active spin or spirit of opposition to the evilness that Israel is doing, so that Trump says, stop, Israel, you're affecting my polling. I mean, it is what, like, we know what it is, what's happening over there. I think sort of rephrasing it as the terrorist state of Israel, you know, there are guidelines that really that might go beyond. Again, I keep mentioning these guidelines. People don't like it. One person given out not liking some of the reality of what we have to do, as if for some reason we'd be ignoring stuff for any other reason. But I don't think, if you go to America, there's a lot of people support Israel. A lot of people support Israel. And they're fed certain information by news outlets over there. You know, your Fox News is CNN's. I'm not sure of the exact line each take, but they would be very pro-Israel. Some of them would be very pro-Israel. A lot of the ones that are pro-Israel would also be very pro-Trump. So half the population of America probably are saying, you know, what's happening over there is correct. And, you know, if you're in power and that's what your support base says, why would you change? It's interesting, like, you know, what I find interesting is during Putin's recent meeting with Donald Trump, Melania, Donald Trump's wife, gave a letter to President Putin's wife, or him directly, I can't remember, because she's particularly interested in children and she wants it to stop what's happening to the children of Ukraine and so on and so forth. But no such letter to Benjamin Netanyahu, who's literally starving children to death. Morally, how does that sit? How can anyone sort of only see one atrocity towards an innocent population and be completely blind to the other? I could never be in that space. I don't think I could ever be that blinkered, but clearly some people are. 9,000 in Derry are looking to get houses, yet they are going to bring in 30,000 at the end of this year. Although international folks, says the listener, I haven't seen those figures. I'm not questioning it. I'm just saying I haven't seen them. We were visiting someone in Letterkenny Hospital over the weekend, and on entering the building, we were hit with a wave of heat. As we walked through the hospital, I noticed every single window that could be opened was opened. Same with doors. Everyone was walking around complaining about the heat. What a waste of money, not to mention damage to the environment with unnecessary burning of fuel. Is no one in charge up there? I'm not sure of the ins and outs of it. There might be a particular temperature hospitals have to be at. A caller says, it's depressing that Bertie Ahern appears to be a real possible candidate for Fianna Fáil. What's wrong with this country? Well, a lot of people backed Bertie Ahern at the peak of his controversy and continue to do so. But ultimately, it will be the people that decide. Hi, just on the current topic, our son did his leaving cert and hopes to go to ATU Letterkenny. We both have good jobs in the HSC, not over the top money, but okay. We don't live outside our means, we're in a three-bed semi with one car. To be honest, Letterkenny was the only option for our son, as we physically could not afford to go to Galway or Dublin, as we simply couldn't afford to send him. This is our first child heading to third level, but I feel we've let him down already by limiting his options. It's not fair for working families. Well, can I just say, you haven't let him down. It's not your fault. You've got a mum and dad there working their asses off and living within their means. There is no... You can take no responsibility there whatsoever. The responsibility lies with the fact that we need more houses, more accommodation to make accommodation more affordable. We need to make, for your average family, college more affordable in terms of fees and what have you. The blame lies absolutely everywhere except at the doorstep of a mum and dad who clearly are very, very good parents. And please don't feel guilty. You have not let that boy down or in any way, shape or form. Morning, Greg. People here are wondering why Highland Radio are not highlighting more the recent video footage of organised groups, gangs attacking people in broad daylight in Letterkenny Main Street. We have to get people to come on and talk about it. I've already referenced it. We've all seen the videos. It's horrific. It's horrendous that such could be happening in broad daylight. But we also need to speak to try and find political representatives that might speak, maybe members of the business community. I can't just sit here and rant about it myself. I need other people to talk about it as well. But obviously anyone, and we have talked about it in the first hour, anyone who's seen that footage would be incredibly shocked by it. That goes without saying. Have a debate about these videos. These crimes happening so close to home, it's becoming that common. People begin to ignore and become numb. Stabbings, rapings, knives, drugs, assaults, sexual assaults, serial offenders, hit and runs, criminal damage, some illegal immigrant gang warfare, prostitution and so on. I never thought growing up those were words I would use to describe Letterkenny. Highland Radio is a duty to the people to talk about these issues. We are literally talking about it right now. I don't want to be defensive on this matter, but I've already outlined we're looking to speak to people about this, of course. But it's not my fault it's happening. I'm here talking about it. A caller says it's going to be a tough winter with the cost of living. I blame the government. That's what the caller says. And on it goes. I'll come back to more of those in a moment, but we're heading towards the bingo numbers. And I thought it would be a good time to speak to Anne Diver from Carn Donagh. Congratulations, Anne.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Yeah, you picked up €1,600 on the bingo, so you're supporting Vision Ireland, and you won big, and you didn't even have to buy your books.
Oh, see that now?
Yeah, you received two bingo books as a birthday present.
I did indeed, yes.
Very good.
I did.
But not your first time playing radio bingo.
Oh, no. I've played every week faithfully.
And have you won before?
I have. I've won a few times. Small, like, but I have.
Very good. Okay.
I was delighted. More than delighted.
Excellent. And €1,600 is the kind of money you can sort of wonder what you might spend it on. Are you going to treat yourself?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The celebrations is ongoing, so it'll come on nice and handy.
All right, it's good. You haven't won the lotto. Yeah, but no, I know what you're saying. What are you celebrating, Anne?
Yeah. That's my 60th birthday.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday, Anne.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you.
And are you doing it for a day, a week, a month, or the whole blooming year?
The whole year.
Good woman.
That's
good woman.
Possible.
All right, okay. I want to see trips abroad. I want spa days, Anne. I want, you know what I mean? You need to be treated like the queen that you are on your 60th birthday year.
Definitely.
All right. Well, listen, what a lovely wee lift then. 1,600 quid in a good year for you. That's fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant.
All right. Well done, Anne. Thanks for supporting Vision Ireland as well, because we're one of the main, when I say we, I mean us as a community, are one of their main funders for the great work that they do through the bingo. So it's great that you won, but also in supporting that great charity. Thanks so much, Anne. Congratulations and delighted. And again, a big happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Well done, Anne. Lovely. Thanks so very much indeed. Right, so how did she win 1,600? Well, there's a daily prize of €400, and if it's not won, it rolls over by €200 every day, so it increases all the while. It turned out that there was no winner since the 15th of August. That's why Anne's win is so high. Sometimes we get winners in consecutive days. Sometimes it rolls over a little bit, so it's a nice wee chunk to get. Also, €1,000 was won on the 14th of August from a rollover. So that's not doing too bad. So we had a rollover win on the 14th of August. One of the lucky players won a grand. And then it rolled on then just to the 15th, only 4 days later. From the 15th, only a number of days later. And we have Anne Diver from Carn Donagh winning €1,600. And a lovely lady and a lovely time of the life, the big roundy birthday, to be winning 1,600 quid, which has a 6 and an 0 in it. Maybe it's karma, maybe it's just the way it's meant to be.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
10:22 on this Tuesday, the 26th of August. It's time for Community Garda information, and I'm joined in studio by Garda Grainne Doherty of the Letterkenny Garda Station. Grainne, as always, thanks so much for calling in.
No problem. Good morning, Greg.
Before we get into the appeals, just to reference what people have been texting about and sharing widely on social media, two instances that happened in Letterkenny in recent days. There aren't appeals in relation to that, but I wanted to reference it because people will instantly go to the fact that maybe we're trying to conceal something or other. But that's for operational reasons, legal reasons, and to ensure the successful progression of the investigations, I'm sure.
Exactly, yeah. So, Gardaí, you're very much aware of both incidents that you were referencing earlier this morning, and both matters are under investigation. You know, for operational reasons, we won't be discussing it on air, but we are very much aware and we're following a definite line of inquiry in relation to both.
And also just a quick reference, obviously, you know, the way things are now, there are cameras everywhere. And not necessarily, I'm not making a judgment call on whether people should post this information or not. But in terms of active investigations and the successful conclusions of those investigations, even the sharing of that footage potentially is problematic.
Yes, exactly. So we would advise people, if they receive this footage or if, you know, are asked to forward it on, not to do so, because it could jeopardise the investigation. And of course, you know, we're not making an appeal in relation to these incidents this morning, but if anybody is aware of these incidents and they do believe that they were in those areas with dash cam footage at the time, that dash cam footage would be welcomed by us, or if they've any relevant information.
But just to be clear, Gardaí are very well aware of the instances, the potential seriousness of them, and have a great deal of information to be moving forward with.
Exactly. And as you said, you know, incidents, especially within main thoroughfares, there's an abundance of CCTV available, and that has been collected by Gardaí.
Right. Let's move on to some further appeals now, and a burglary in St Johnston, Grainne.
Yes. So, Gardaí, you're investigating a burglary. This occurred at a vacant property in the area of Brandon Park in St Johnston between August 1st and August 19th. A house was entered between those dates, so a television and a copper cylinder were stolen from within. This was only recently discovered. The fact that this incident had occurred, it was only recently reported to us. We're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity or vehicles within that area of Brandon Park, St Johnston, between those dates, to make contact with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167 100. And as with all of our appeals today, the Garda confidential line is very useful. Information can be passed on there on 1800 666 111. And as I said before, you don't talk to a human being on the other end of that line when you call. It's an automated answer machine, really. So you, after the beep, you leave your message. You don't have to leave your own details. Just leave whatever information you have on there.
Yeah, that's a big window, the 1st to the 19th of August, but someone may have spotted something in the St Johnston area. Criminal damage now in Lawn Park.
Yes, this incident happened at Lawn Park, Ballyshannon, on Saturday the 23rd of August at around 9:10 p.m. or shortly after it. The front window of a house in that area was smashed at that time, so we're anxious to speak to anybody who might have been in that area with a dash cam between 9pm and 9:15pm, and we're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed the incident or who might have observed again suspicious vehicles, people, activity in that area around that time to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530.
Yeah, not broad daylight anymore, but certainly not pitch black either. Someone's bound to have caught something there. An incident being investigated in St Johnston.
Yes, this incident, it's an incident of alleged assault. It occurred at a property in the area of Cushowen in St Johnston on Saturday the 23rd of August in and around 4:10am. So as part of our investigation into that matter, we're appealing to anybody who might have been in that area with a dash cam around that time to make the footage available to us. We're also appealing to anybody who might have observed a man on foot in the area between 4:10am and 4:30am to make contact with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100.
Now, theft from a car in Muff being investigated.
This is quite an unusual incident, actually. Yeah, this incident happened in Muff on Monday, the 25th of August, in around 10:05am, so daylight hours and possibly a lot of people around at that time of the morning. A silver Ford, possibly a Mondeo, entered the car park of a licensed premises at Main Street Muff at that time. The female driver, she's described, she had blonde hair. She proceeded to remove the number plates of a parked car in that car park. She then went on to fix these plates onto her own car, and she travelled then in the direction of Quigley's Point. So we're appealing to anybody who might have been in the area of Main Street Muff or on the Quigley's Point Road between 9:30am and 10:30am on that date with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. And any relevant information should be forwarded on to Gardaí in Bunkrana on 9320540.
We do see that from time to time, don't we? And I mean, it's not the act of taking the number plates in and of itself necessarily, though that, of course, clearly is a crime, and then misidentifying a vehicle by attaching them to another. But I mean, it's for what reason that might follow too that we need to be conscious of.
Yeah,
we don't know, but...
Yeah, well, we quite regularly receive reports of maybe even one registration plate being removed from a car, a parked car, and that is a common enough occurrence. But this is a very unusual one in that the person went on to affix the plates to their own car before leaving again, you know. So the partial registration number of the stolen plates is SJZ46. That's the plates that were stolen and affixed onto the silver Ford Mondeo.
Okay, strange one. A car targeted in Letterkenny recently too.
Yes, so this incident of theft, it occurred in a car park at a medical centre on the Pierce Road in the town, so between 3pm on Tuesday the 19th of August and midday on Wednesday the 20th of August. An unlocked car was entered at that location and a small sum of cash was stolen from it. So if anybody observed anything or can offer any relevant information in relation to this, they can contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167 100. And again, I don't want to proportion any blame onto, I'm very conscious of that, you know, but just I want to give a wee bit of advice just in relation to car security in light of this incident. Drivers, just please always ensure that your vehicle is locked. When you're leaving it unattended, just make double sure that you've locked it up. Don't leave valuables or cash in your car, and don't leave anything of value within view. And always report any suspicious activity you see in areas where there are parked cars. You know, if you see anybody going around checking out cars or looking in windows of cars, please contact Gardaí immediately.
Yeah, indeed. And you, of course, you're not apportioning any blame. I feel sometimes you're speaking to me because, you know, sometimes I forget, I walk off because life's busy. So it's a welcomed reminder. Sheep suspected of being stolen in Remelton.
Yes, we recently received this report. The theft from the area of Newton, Remelton, between Tuesday, this is actually quite a large time frame now, but Tuesday the 15th of July and Sunday the 24th of August, so 27 sheep were stolen from a field in that area between those dates. And again, this was only recently discovered when the farmer went to check on the sheep. If anybody noticed any suspicious activity in that area between those dates, or if they can assist us with any relevant information, they're asked to contact Gardaí in Milford on 915 3060. And again, we often say this in relation to the theft of livestock. You know, if anybody within the farming circles hear any whispers or hear any relevant information, even they think it's nothing. It could be something very important and might assist our investigation greatly.
For sure. And so sometimes after these appeals, they turn up. You know, that maybe they entered another field somewhere or other. But who's to say? Keep your eye out. If you know anything, pass the information on. It's a significant amount of sheep. Right, now, we were chatting to a lad yesterday. It was an All-Ireland ticket. He thought He was getting an All-Ireland ticket. Mm-hmm. He sent his ID by way of a trust sort of a... Yes? I can say that? What? Oh, right. We have good news in relation to that. Does Grania have it or is it just me? Has it? Oh, right. Something completely different. It's completely unrelated. She's waving her hands. Sorry. So, am I red? I am. So, Caroline, I'm on air with one of the most senior Gardaí in Donegal here.
You mean one of the oldest?
She just hasn't been recognised by the Ó Gaoithe Sí Chathanna, despite me plugging it at every turnaround. No, we were chatting to a lad yesterday who bought tickets, and that was bad enough. He lost 280 quid, but there was sort of an exchange of information as a trust thing. And he sent on a picture of his passport. I know he shouldn't have done that. And next thing you know, now his ID is being used as a trust thing to defraud other people, and he's getting calls from up and down the country and what have you. But anyway, sorry if that's crossed over in anything you're going to talk about. What is the situation that we should be aware of in terms of buying tickets?
Well, I suppose there's been a lot of major events recently. So Gardaí in various areas of the country, and including here in Donegal, are currently investigating alleged incidents of online fraud. So the alleged resale of event tickets, such as for the All-Ireland final or Oasis or whatever big events are taking place. We'd like to remind people, when they're purchasing event tickets, only use official channels such as the official event website or an official ticketing agent. And I know, look, it's easy for me and you to sit here and say that, but if you have somebody who's a fan, a massive fan of a big band, and it's so tempting when you see these tickets on offer, so we'd ask people, please don't do that.
Because there is a proportion of genuine tickets out there as well, you see.
Well, there are, of course.
That's the problem.
People that can't attend and they've bought their ticket and they wish to resell it on you. We're asking people, look, we have a few tips here, useful tips. When you're purchasing tickets for any major events, it is best to purchase from official websites such as the event website or official ticketing agent. Check the rules in relation to the resales of tickets for that event. Before you purchase the second-hand ticket, check the official ticketing site and be aware of the rules around second-hand tickets. Avoid unverified sources, second or third-party resellers. Be wary of people selling tickets on social media. Be cautious of new profiles with little or no activity, advertising tickets for sale or unverified websites. Verify the ticket from the information provided, and these e-tickets can be reprinted also, so keep that in mind. If a deal is like everything else, if it seems too good to be true, it usually is. Don't feel pressurised into making a quick purchase you're unsure about. Other red flags are urgent demands for payment, lack of information, requests for payment in online currency, or transfer to a bank account outside of the jurisdiction, or else the seller might only be communicating via instant messaging apps. Always pay in a way that is traceable and or refundable to ensure that any online payments are reputable and secure. Check for HTTPS. Check for the lock symbol beside the website URL. And just in general, do not pay via a method you're not familiar with. Don't ever provide your bank or card details to any unknown individual online. There's never a guarantee that tickets bought from unauthorised sources will be valid. It could be too late. You could be up there on the day, arriving at the venue, and that's when you find out, unfortunately, that you've been scammed. We're asking everybody and appealing to them, if they think they might be a victim of a scam or fraud, please contact your bank first and foremost, if you've provided your banking details, and report the matter to us also in Gardaí Sí Chathanna.
There is also an issue at this time as well, and it's particularly at this time, but not exclusively, of accommodation fraud. And I think we're particularly more vulnerable to that because how far we are removed from, you know, some of the colleges down the country.
Yeah, so, well, in the first 6 months of 2025, reports of accommodation fraud have risen by 22%, with approximately 160 cases recorded by us. So that's the first 6 months of 2025. So, and like, look, the recent Leaving Cert results and the third level CAO offers will be coming out, I believe, this week or next week. So we're just advising that accommodation fraud typically peaks at this time of year, particularly when students are seeking accommodation. So we're advising everybody, please be wary of rental scams, especially students that are returning to college. Rental fraud occurs when a victim pays money to rent accommodation, typically in the form of a deposit, and then afterwards they discover that that transaction was fraudulent. So just a few examples of rental fraud. So the fraudster claims to be out of the country. They can't show the renter the property unless they pay the deposit first. You then pay your deposit and then you're at the loss of the deposit. The fraudster is living in the property. They show a number of people the property. They get a deposit from several people and then they're gone. Adios, they disappear with your money. The transaction appears normal until the renter finds out that the property doesn't actually even exist. it's already occupied, or that the keys don't work, and then at that stage the so-called landlord has disappeared. So there's plenty of advice there in relation to accommodation fraud and warning signs, and it's at the Angarda Síochána website, garda.ie. Fraudsmart.ie is actually another great website for scam and fraud advice.
And I think too, just they work by putting pressure on us. You have to be quick. It's going. Get in now. You'll miss out. And, you know, mom or dad or both are trying to make the right decision. And the teenage, if we don't get this now, we're going to lose it.
Well, particularly,
you know, it's so easy to fall for. It's so easy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When the CAO offers come out, for example, the panic will be on that evening straight away, especially if it's some of the big cities, Dublin, Galway, Cork. You know, if it's one of those areas and think it's going to be snapped up, we need to get in there and we need, you know, we need to act now. And as you say, there's a sense of urgency.
Yeah. Sadly, please, work, isn't it?
Yeah. But just anybody, look, before the offers come out, go on there, go on to the Garda website or fraudsmart.ie, read up on rent fraud. And, you know, just inform yourself about it before handing any, over any money or making any agreements.
Have you any information about an open day at Bunkran and Garda Station?
The fire station open day.
Fire station.
The fire station open day, because the guards are going to be there too.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah. Sorry, no, the guards.
I was trying to be smart and got it wrong.
Oh, you know, you're right. No, so it's a meet your local firefighters day at Bunkrana Garda Station. It's on Saturday, August 30th. Actually, the fire brigade are having open days all over the county. Mm. You see it on their page, their Facebook page. But some of the events that they're having, other emergency services aren't going to be present.
But
it'll just be the fire brigade themselves. So for this one on August 30th in Bunkrana, the Gardaí will be there and other emergency services also. Sensory time will take place between 11:30 and 12:30 p.m. And during that time, flashing lights and sirens won't be used. So the full event will run between 11:30 to 3:30 p.m. And entry is free. And it's always a brilliant day. I know the one in Letterkenny is always very enjoyable too. And all of the emergency services attend it. It's a great day out for the family. And it's very informative for children too.
Because it's the kind of thing where you learn a bit, but you're enjoying it because they might be watching Fireman Sam or whatever. And we all love the sirens and and for those that have less tolerance for that, it's great now that the sensory hours have been put in place and recognised that everyone can have a go.
Yeah.
Were you partying at the weekend? Did you go to summer sessions? No?
No, I went nowhere. I
was really?
No, nowhere.
I could see you up at the front there, Cascada or whoever was playing.
If you could see me, there was something wrong because I was at home.
No, I could see you. I didn't see you.
You're
going
to get me in bother at home. I did slip away for a few hours on Saturday evening.
Can I just characterize it? I never saw Grania anywhere. I was just asking if she'd gone. I said I could imagine her dancing to Special D.
I only nipped out for a few hours to visit some relations.
I trust you.
Yeah.
Grania, listen, thank you so very much indeed. We do appreciate that. That is the wonderful Garda Grania Doherty from the Letterkenny Garda Station. And we're back with Community Garda information after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. And you'll be able to listen back or watch back to that on the various platforms, including the Garda Síochána Facebook page and our website a little later on today. I'm joined in studio now by Liam Cannon, who's a psychotherapist and owner of New Dawn Counselling. And we invited you in, Liam, because, you know, unfortunately in Donegal, we seem to get more than our fair share of tragedy.
Yeah.
Maybe every county says the same.
Yeah.
But particularly in the last while, there's been a terrible loss of life, particularly amongst our young people. Mm-hmm. And I found myself sort of trying to comprehend it and then couldn't.
Yeah.
I kind of almost gave in on it. Do you know that sort of a way?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's so unimaginable. Mm-hmm. And it's a grief that's so widely felt, Liam.
Yeah, completely. You know, and I suppose a lot of these situations are unexpected, totally unexpected. And I suppose we ask ourselves maybe, you know, what are the contributing factors? And as, at the time, I suppose it's very difficult it's very difficult to find answers. And for people who are in those situations, I think the first thing they look for is an answer, try to make sense or meaning of what's just happened. You know, there's, I suppose there's that trauma, that instant trauma, there isn't any answers and there's no explanation and nobody can actually help them out at that particular time.
And I suppose that might seem stark, but we have to be realistic. You can't reason in those early stages, and there simply are going to be questions that are unanswerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Not in those. I mean, I think most people want to help in those early stages. And I think the best help you can give anybody is just to listen to them. You know, they have to go through that initial numbness, you know, pain, panic, denial, you know, as all part of the grieving process. Disbelief, you know, frustration, anger. And I suppose the most important support you can give somebody is not trying to make it better, which is the human reaction is try and resolve something. You can't resolve this. And the best support you can give them is to listen, hear them, validate them. And just give them space. Really.
Yeah, because people often struggle for words.
Yeah.
And what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense, you know, allow an open conversation. You can't fix things. You can't make someone necessarily feel better by rationalizing it or something. You just listen and allow them to control the conversation as much as possible, or perhaps just be in the company of another person with no conversation.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, I suppose if we think about this, you know, what is actually happening is something unexpected happens quite fast. We're not prepared for it. We're going about our normal life. And suddenly, you know, we're met with you know, bad news. And the first thing the body does is the body shuts down. You know, it hears what's being said, but the nervous system responds and you go into that place of numbness. So, you might sit and say nothing because you're in total shock. And that
and
period,
while these losses are so unnatural, is that in a way the brain trying to protect its host effectively?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, completely. And that period can last, you know, from hours to weeks for people, or months. And just, I suppose, on that, you know, quite often we'll get calls from people who have just had a loss and they're looking for counselling, and really they're not ready for counselling at that point. You know, it's recommended that you kind of have about a 6-month period, and that's to allow you to adjust to the reality.
Is there anything else in that time, though, that space that you can work on for yourself? Or is it just a process that one has to work through? And it's so subjective. People deal with things in different ways. And we'll often hear stories of, not stories, but realities of a mom might feel one way and a dad deals with a different way.
Yeah.
Or a sibling feels one way, another sibling deals with a different way. And you can be looking at each other going, you know, why is your pathway set different to mine?
Yeah, completely. And I think that's a very good point, Greg, because every person within that family is all trying to make meaning of the same loss. And so they will all have different views of it, understandings of it. They will all have different reasons for it. They'll all try and find reasons why this happened. And so they can have very, very different perspectives of the same loss, which is why it's very important to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Just to listen and give them the space.
Yeah, and just to be abundantly clear, myself and Liam aren't talking about any specific instances. Mm. Unfortunately, instances have happened over the years and will continue to happen. Mm. And it's a case of trying to have a conversation now that might help in some way if someone needs this information into the future, and we pray they don't, that, you know, they can get a sense of what they're feeling is completely unique.
Mm-hmm.
But there are crossovers in people's experiences as well, because we are all human.
Yeah.
I want to speak to a moment about how we speak to young people, that often in a situation where there's been a road traffic collision or suicide or whatever, there's been a sudden loss of young life. And for many, it's the first, maybe even too young to have lost their grandparents.
Yeah.
It's the first experience of death.
Mm-hmm.
And we as parents panic then, because, you know, what's the right thing to say? How often should you make sure they're okay? Do you know all that kind of stuff? It feels like a minefield. And sometimes, unfortunately, you do see a series of events, whether it's by coincidence or one triggers another. How do we communicate with our young people to ascertain how they're doing?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that's important is open conversations with them, checking in with them, again, not trying to rescue them or make it feel better, but to normalise what they're experiencing. You know, that's vital, because it's the first time that they have encountered something like this, and the feelings are completely overwhelming. So normalising the feelings, supporting them just by open conversation. But I think for a lot of young people, I think they rely on friends more than they do, because the friends are usually the people that are most impacted, and they feel that the friends are the people who really understand. But it's really important for young people to recognise that parents quite often have been through this process. And while it's not the same, and it is unique to everybody, they do understand the pain that you're going through at that particular time. And they're the people that can really support you through that.
Yeah, and I suppose then our job as adults is to, you know, maybe then try and have that conversation, not like a peer might, but to be really open and say, look, I have some understanding of this. I can talk it through with you in whatever way you're prepared to talk.
Yeah, completely.
Rather than trying to come down to their sort of level, not down to the level, but you know what I mean?
No, completely. And I mean, I think it is about not making it better for them, because you can't. And I suppose that gets interpreted then by a young person as you don't understand, you know, because you're saying something that doesn't make sense to them at that particular time. So it's really giving them the space to be how they are in whatever way they present to you, but being able to listen and hear. And I think as parents, maybe our part is it's about not rescuing them at that particular time, because that's what we tend to do. We try to make it better for our children, and sometimes they then feel that they can't come to us or speak to us.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think I could find myself, or have found this myself, Liam, in a situation like this, where I feel that I'm trying to help, but maybe I'm actually trying to hear what would make me feel better.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense? So rather than my focus being on how can I support this young person in my life, I might be saying, what can they say to me to ease my worry or my concern?
Yeah.
And I have to step out of that, don't I? Actually sort of say, no, I can deal with this. How can I offer them support and not sort of seeking support in return?
That's it. And it's about holding that awareness when that arises for you, that, you know, you have to be mindful that this is not about you, this is about them. And our innate human, nature is to make things better for people. And so we try then to make it better for them, but we're missing the point in their view.
Yeah, you know? And I just want to you made it clear, and I want to make it absolutely clear. When we talk about seeking mental health supports in the aftermath of something like this, that's somewhat different to counselling, because counselling is a program, perhaps over an extended period of time, to help you try and carry your grief with you or move forward. Mm-hmm. But if you are feeling, obviously, like you may do harm to yourself in the immediate aftermath, it's imperative that you ring some of the agencies, such as Aware on 1800 80 48 48 or the Samaritans on 116 123. You will recognise it in yourself that it's urgent assistance that you need, which would be separate to sort of the bereavement counselling that we're talking about.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think the first thing is that if you do find yourself in that situation, particularly after suicide, quite often, you know, when somebody loses someone close to them to suicide, they themselves become suicidal. I think in that situation, it's really important. First protocol is always your GP. You know, you need to go in and speak to your GP and share that information with them, because this is where I think there's actually something that's really important happening currently, and I think it's to do with people, young people in particular, are reaching out to ChatGPT and
TikTok and other platforms
to
seek
like
solace.
And actually some countries have actually banned that.
Well, unfortunately, TikTok, for an example, there's an awful lot of information that's enabling.
Exactly, and that's the point.
There's never a good time for me to sort of ask this question, and maybe it's not for a psychotherapist, or it is. Is it appropriate to speak to people about the consequences of suicide, for an example, in that, you know, maybe they might be of a view that there's no option, that maybe they'll be celebrated in their passing and remembered and eulogized and what have you. Mm-hmm. And maybe they don't fully consider the devastation it leaves behind. Is it helpful to discuss that with a young person, or is that actually just increasing a burden or a cross?
Well, no, actually, I think it's always, I mean, I do honestly feel as a psychotherapist for many years that one of the biggest issues we have in society really is that culturally we don't know how to address the suicide issue. I think there's a huge issue in that in itself, in that I think we do need to start having open conversations about it. We do need to normalise it. It's a part of everyday life. And we do need to look at how do we actually support people, because historically there has been a lot of stigma associated with suicide, even in how it was recorded.
And we're still only working on it now. The coroners at the moment are only.
Yeah,
so when you're very young, when you get older, and I'm not saying, you know, suicide only affects young people, but as you get older, you grasp at every opportunity to live, almost, for the most people. But sometimes I think younger people, they don't maybe understand the finality of it.
True. Yeah.
Or the consequences for those that they love so dearly. I'm just... Again, the suicide happens so frequently. There's never a good time to discuss this.
Yeah.
I'm not referencing anything current, but is that a route that we need to go down in terms of trying to reach people?
Well, yeah, I think yes. There's certainly a lot of common sense in what you're saying in relation to, you know, maybe talking to people, younger people, educating people about, you know, the impact, the longer lasting impact that suicide has. And that's one part of, I suppose, what we can do as families right around our communities. But I do think that we need to be doing a hell of a lot more in relation to the whole suicide piece itself, in that when somebody, and it's the understanding, it's understanding suicide fully, because when a client or a person actually gets into that situation where that suicide becomes a choice, you know, it's practically impossible currently to change that around. And the reason being is because when that person makes that decision, they somehow feel a relief. Mm-hmm. It seems like the right thing. And they're, I suppose, the reason that I suppose we're not good on this is because our support systems, our mental health systems out there are not adequate to support people at that point. And I suppose if we look at, drawing a parallel to addiction services, we do have addiction services where people can go through a program for 6, 8, 10 weeks, you know, where they're there for the full period. And I think in relation to suicide, we need exactly the same resources.
But often you hear, in terms of how we deal with addiction, the person hitting rock bottom before seeking help.
100%.
But unfortunately, in mental health, that rock bottom can be the act itself, if that makes sense.
Yes, quite often, unfortunately.
It's intervening or finding a way to reach people prior to that?
Well, yeah, it is, absolutely. And I think, again, going back to what the point we were making earlier there, I think this is where it's very important for young people to not rely on ChatGPT or online forums for this level of support. You do need to speak to somebody. You do need to get into a room with somebody face to face, because the bit that's important here is the relational piece that the client will build there with that person, and that trust where they can actually open up and share their darkest, deepest thoughts or feelings.
I'm just going to read this text. We're going to run over a little bit, please, so bear with us, because I want to address this. We lost our son, and I'll redact the name just to make sure. I'm not 100% sure if the... it's directed at you. We lost our son Shamie 8 years ago. Liam will remember him. we still ask ourselves a lot of questions, why, etc. It's a very heavy cross to carry.
Yeah.
We have to come to terms, if that's not insensitive language, there are things we will never, ever know. You will never be able to know the inner workings of an incredibly complex mm-hmm. mind. And all of our minds are incredibly complex, yeah. by the way. We see questions, but mm-hmm. we simply will not ever get all of the questions. And that can relate to a collision, what happened in the lead up to a collision, or what have you, you know, mm. or it can be even if someone dies relatively sudden, we can make questions constantly about a treatment process, or mm-hmm. did that scan being 3 days later cause this? We can't answer, you know, we wish we could, but yeah. there's so many questions in so many different ways we lose people that there aren't answers to. There simply aren't. There's questions, mm-hmm. but there's not answers.
Yeah, no, completely. And yeah, I do remember, I certainly do remember that suicide. And yes, I mean, it's, you know, years have passed and there's the complicated grief there, that there aren't answers. You know, I suppose it goes back to what I was saying there, you know, a while ago, that we do really need to be looking at what can we do differently here in relation to people who are suicidal, because a session of counselling a week or even two sessions a week is not going to reach the person, because they're going back out with their own feelings, back to the same, you know, environment where maybe, you know, they're not able to pull themselves out of that position. So it's intense work that's needed here. And I think until we actually start putting centres like this in place, we're always going to have, mm. unfortunately, high numbers of suicide. And as I said, you know, the concern for me is younger people are now turning to ChatGPT. And, you know, even recently I was reading where a young person suicided, and the family discovered that ChatGPT helped them to write the suicide note.
Yeah.
So these are very concerning matters.
Because that is enforcing, that is yeah. validating.
Yeah.
Just in relation to, separate to this incident, you know how we have parts of our brain that have do similar work, like fight or flight, for an example?
Yes.
Is it possible that sometimes when we eternally seek answers to questions, mm-hmm. that's a part of our brain that instead of remembering someone or keeping them alive with a smell or a voice or a sound, is that our brain, the connection is that negative connection, effectively, that constant seeking answers. Is it possible that in a way that is us trying to stay connected to a person and maybe work on trying to flip it a bit and try and build
okay.
more positive connections? I don't want to go into the area of psychotherapy, but I just...
No, but
I'm curious. Yeah.
No, well, let me just maybe help you to make meaning of this in another way. When we experience a loss of any kind, you know, that the first thing that happens is we have to go through step one of the process, which is to accept that reality. And that can take months to years for people. So, you know, symptoms there, you're looking at anger, you know, numbness, panic, denial, loss of appetite, you know, a whole change in the person, as in physically and mentally. Everything changes. And then with time, we hope that if we can make meaning and sense of that, we move then into the stage two. And the stage two is basically where you would enter into counselling, and you're working through the pain and the grief. So, you know, for people who have, say, more complicated grief, the process isn't just a linear process. It jumps back and forward, and maybe for years and years. So you say stage two of that process, you're going through the pain and the grief. So you'll go from, as I said, the protesting and the anger to the pining. So you're switching. You have no control over that.
Right.
You have no control over that. Stage three, then, you know, you begin to come out of that, you know, piece, and you're adjusting to a new environment without the person. Then the last piece, then, you go through is the piece that you're just referring to, is that you find a connection. So, you know, that as you find a connection, it's a way of keeping the deceased person alive and with you. And that's the final stage of grieving, which is very important. That's where you can actually feel joy again. You begin to feel, you know, life again. You begin to move on. But the person is part of that. So, for example, you know, just giving an example here, if you had lost somebody who was, say, big into football, and, you know, they went to all, say, Donegal matches, and then following the loss, you find yourself that you can't face going to matches. At the very end of the grieving stage, when you come out of that, that might be the solace or the hope or the comfort you get.
I can do that again.
I can do this again.
I can imagine and what such and
absolutely,
such
would have been
what
would be saying
me.
And yeah. what they would be thinking and what yeah. they would be saying.
And the thing is, there's no timeline on those stages. We're all different. Okay.
No, but as you said there, you know, you go back to the very start of this, you know, the fight flight piece here. And it's like that's when we talk about fight, flight and freeze. And there's more than that. There's flap and various other, you know, ways of describing it. But when we go back to that stage, you yourself, your brain is saying one thing, but your body is doing something else. Mm. And it's because, you know, there's a disconnect happening. It's nearly like there's a miscommunication happening between the brain and the body, and the brain's trying to control something that the body is saying no. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose the thing that's important here, I suppose, as well, is just to, you know, acknowledge for people that might help, maybe help put a frame on some things for them, is that, you know, the when you lose somebody in any way, in any circumstances, your grieving process is determined by the quality of the relationship you had with that person.
Truth, yeah.
When they were alive.
Yeah.
And so that then throws up a lot of the emotional stuff, the feelings. And the feelings, you have to remember here, as the oldest part of us, as every human being. Mm-hmm. Because for the first 3 to 7 years, from 0 to 7 is the most important period in life. And people don't maybe realize that or recognize the weight of what I'm saying here. But the first 7 years are the most important, because particularly the first 3, we experience life not as thinking, but as feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we know that shapes our view of the world is during that period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you come then to, you know, losing something where something traumatic happens, like a traumatic loss, then it's your feelings takes over, but your brain is trying to do something different.
So do we regress almost?
Well, I wouldn't say regress, no, but we're stopped in our tracks, because feeling is the strongest part of us, not our brain.
Yeah.
Despite the time we spend developing the brain, you know, and say going through school and that, we repress the emotional piece.
Yeah, I think.
But it wins out.
I would love if figure out how to discuss certain things, and I think we're trying to do that today. We need an action plan. We need it to be taken as seriously as we do, although there's still work to be done in terms of road traffic collision, water safety, whatever it might be, how we discuss it, you know, how we discuss it with young people. I think we can't have a conversation separate to young people and talk about them. I think they need to be very much a part of it, and we need to understand their understanding of life and death and grief, you know. But you see, I think we're afraid of doing that because we might trigger something, and we're gonna have to figure.
Well, they're difficult conversations. They're really difficult conversations, and you know, they're really difficult conversations. But I think we do need to do. We need really need a lot more research here, where we're actually looking at how do we make this. How do we put services in place that actually meet the needs of you know, people. Because you know, there's clearly something not working,
and I think given the impact this has on an individual, but the family and the wider community, it's a responsibility of the state to do that, if as they are charged with our health.
Yeah, completely.
Okay, yeah. Liam, yeah, completely. Listen, it's just very important that people understand, by the way, that we're talking about this, generally speaking, as much as you can, and that it's about maybe helping us all to figure out how to discuss this and deal with this. Mm-hmm. If this has had an immediate impact on you, of course, Pieter House, 1-800-247-247, AWARE, 1-800-80-4848, Samaritans, 116-123. There are specific counselling services for children, Louis Corner, for an example, and there are counselling services available from Liam, Noondawn Counselling, and elsewhere as well. And, you know, find out when it's the right time for you.
Yeah, and on the whole counselling front, you know, I would say to people, go and when if you decide to go to counselling, there's something, I suppose, that is a very important point for me to make, that I think check out your counsellor, because there's a lot of counsellors out there who are not properly qualified, and it's to do with regulation, but they're doing all sorts of work. Some of them, you know, are taking on clients that they're not able to support themselves. So, you know, really check out your counsellor, check out their qualifications, that they're qualified in the area that they're working in, and that they're accredited. You know, that they're part of a regulated system that currently exists, which is, you know, the professional bodies. So it's really important to do that, because otherwise you can find yourself grieving and then with somebody who's not able to support you, and you're feeling worse.
Yeah, and just to be make sure that you heed Liam's advice, if you have any influence or young people in your life, that young people are using artificial intelligence, Gemini, ChatGPT, Grok and others, and they are not designed for that type of work. And you can circumnavigate any protections there as well to have your feelings affirmed and not helpful advice given. Also, really be careful of TikTok, because someone might go onto TikTok and seek some sort of mental health support. The algorithms will throw all manner of stuff at them, which also might actually affirm how they're feeling and have a very negative impact on them as well. We are having to counter what is going on in spaces where young people, and not so young people, by the way, they congregate. Liam, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Liam Cannon, psychotherapist and owner of New Dawn Counselling. That conversation so important that it ran on a little. So we'll have news headlines for you again at midday at the end of this programme.